Cecil B. DeMille's 1956 version of The Ten Commandments featured Charlton Heston as Moses, fighting against the oppressiveness of Ramses II, played by Yul Brynner.
Let my people go!
Slaves are mine. Their lives are mine. All that they own is mine. I do not know your God.
But DeMille directed a different incarnation of the Ten Commandments, a silent version, 3 decades earlier. And recently, archaeologists in Southern California found a sphinx used in that 1923 film. It was from the set that was buried there by DeMille, at least in part because it was too difficult to move. Scott Eyman is DeMille's biographer and is with me to explain more about why the set was buried and why DeMille made 2 different Ten Commandments films. Scott, what was DeMille thinking when he decided to hide the set? He basically buried it.
Well, it was perfectly logical at the time. He needed a flat space with a great deal of sand because Egypt is flat and it has lots of sand. Paramount Pictures, which is where he was working, had a very small back lot. It was out of the question to build the set size he wanted to build on the back lot. All the studios had ranches out in the valley they used for lavish sets that they didn't have room for in Hollywood because space in Hollywood is limited. But the Paramount Ranch was rolling. It was all rolling and it was all green, and there was no way they could convert it all into ancient Egypt. So he needed a flat space with a lot of sand, and he found Guadalupe, which is nothing but sand. And it's a long drive from Hollywood, but it was exactly what he needed, and it's close to the ocean, so he could use it to also film the Exodus. He built his set at Guadalupe, a huge set with rows of sphinxes leading into the walled city of the Pharaoh. He shot the footage he needed, and then he had the problem of, what do I do with this? Now, his core problem was it was public land. It was not owned by Paramount. It wasn't owned by anybody. He simply took over the land to build the set and had guards there at night to make sure nobody was taking pictures. But when the production left Guadalupe, he was worried about have somebody coming in and bootlegging the set and shooting some quick and dirty movie and getting that wonderful set that he'd paid serious money for out to the public before he could get his film out to the public. So, not surprisingly, he decided to level it. He tore down the huge walls that he'd built. But the sphinxes, which were made out of plaster on bases, he simply kind of bulldozed over on their sides and covered them with sand. And there they lay for the next 90 years.
I mean, DeMille is one of the kings of Hollywood, certainly, in the history of Hollywood filmmaking. How did this set compare? Was this set something that was so incredibly unique? Did it just blow people away at the time?
Yes. In the late... The first huge set that was built in Hollywood was D.W. Griffith's set for Intolerance, the Babylon set, and that's 1916. And then came World War I, which kind of involved a lot of men and material, so not a lot was done in 1917, 1918. After World War I, Hollywood began competing with each other in building splendid sets. This was climaxed by Douglas Fairbanks building a huge Norman castle for his film of Robin Hood in 1922. And DeMille was essentially just raising the ante and building an even bigger set, you know, for ancient Egypt in 1923. That was about the ultimate. That was as far as they went, because Adolf Zucker, who was one of the co-founders of Paramount, along with DeMille, was convinced DeMille was going to destroy the company because he simply didn't care about money, according to Zucker. And the set and the production of the Ten Commandments was so expensive that he began maneuvering to get DeMille out of the company, because he thought DeMille's primary allegiance was to DeMille and not to Paramount.
So clearly, the 1950s version of the Ten Commandments is quite a different film. So how satisfied was he with the two films, as different as they were?
He was very proud of both of them for different reasons. He was proud of the first one because he was laying his marker down as a maker of an epic spectacular, which became his dominant mode of production. It's what he was known for then. It's what he's known for now. And I remember John Carradine once told me he enjoyed DeMille. He liked him a lot. A lot of actors didn't like him, but Carradine liked him. He said, because on his last day working on the Ten Commandments, DeMille came up to him and said, "John, your great-grandchildren will see you in this picture 100 years from now." And Carradine said, "And it looks like he was right."
What do you think DeMille would have made of all the CGI stuff, considering he loved to have these big sets?
Well, he was a man of the theater, and he liked sets. He liked physical things. All the filmmakers of that era did. They wouldn't have understood the attraction of working exclusively with green screens or blue screens, although DeMille had to do that a lot when he shot the Red Sea parting. That was all done with the rough equivalent of blue screens today. But I'm sure he would have adopted it, you know, because he was very interested in technical things, even though his heart, his dialogue is always firmly in the 19th century. If you look at his films, they're very modern in terms of the era in which they were made.
Was the epic what we would call the blockbuster of today, Scott? And the fact that most of the blockbusters today are based on superheroes, or there was the Harry Potter run for a long time. What do you think, as someone who's been a film historian, about how the nature of an epic has changed, and how much of that, again, is because of computers and green screens and that sort of thing?
When you look at a movie made in a DeMille picture, for instance, there's a real sense of physicality. You can feel the weight of the buildings. You can feel you can see 5,000 extras in a shot, you know, because there really are 5,000 extras in a shot. When you see a modern picture like that, Ridley Scott did a dreadful Exodus picture called, I think it was Of Gods and Kings. And, of course, he had, you know, where DeMille had 6,000 people in the Exodus in one shot, Ridley Scott had 20,000 people, but they were all little bouncing dots. You know, they were zeros and ones. They were all digital people. They weren't really people. And you could feel the difference in the emotional impact of the filmmaking. Photography doesn't lie. It does lie, but it doesn't lie, because it translates emotions, and it translates the spiritual impact of what DeMille is photographing.
Scott Eyman is a film writer. One of his books is Empire of Dreams, The Epic Life of Cecil B. DeMille.